Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to make a start. Good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. And for those that care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
courage to change things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And again, welcome everybody. It's great to see you all here tonight, sober and at an AA meeting. Who would have thought? So, the Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that once the meeting's underway, those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Well, as most of you know, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step one, and it's kind of the second half of step one. And we're going to read some paragraphs as usual. From the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This week there's no Roman numerals, so it should go more smoothly than last week. There was some comments made about XXX, which I didn't appreciate. So anyway, hopefully that won't come up tonight. Thank you. Keep coming back. So anyway, we're going to start off... we're going to start off on page 45. And we're actually going to read a bit more than usual. There's several paragraphs we're going to read tonight. No, we're not starting on page 45. I took the pages that we're reading out. Please excuse me, I'm sorry. We're starting off on page 5. Sorry. Getting all confused. So I'll read step one. How about that before we start? So step one just says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So page 5, I woke up, this had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well and get good and drunk then. And I did. So I don't know who's going first. Who's going first?
I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Chris.
And I would like to start by saying neither page 5 nor 45 are the pages Graham sent me.
Are you kidding me?
No, but that doesn't matter because I was prepping, so this is just as well because now everything that I, you know, mentally prepared in my head to come out perfectly.
Surprise.
I can't do. So there you go. So it's even better. It's better this way. No, it's fine. It really is better this way. I woke up and saw that this had to be stopped. That went on for a long time with me. You know, there were years of waking up and knowing this was a problem and had to be stopped, and yet knowing that the torture and the consequences and what it meant for me the next day could be incredibly tragic, I couldn't seem to stop myself from waking up and doing it again anyway. If I summoned up every ounce of willpower and strength that I was made of, and if something happened, you know, unusually bad that time, like another crying ultimatum from my husband, you know, that was a little bit more motivation for me. And even then, the best I was ever able to do was 3 days. Day one was pretty good. I was still feeling pretty lousy from the day before, you know, so I could kind of ride that way for a day. Day two, now I'm feeling a little bit better. You know, that's all right. Day two, pretty much in the bag. And something magical would happen on day three. I don't know where the pain went. I don't know where the memory went. You know, I couldn't seem to summon up. I once went so far as to write down the pain and torture and shame and embarrassment that I felt, so that I thought, when I want to drink again, I'll open up to this piece of paper and I will read this and I will remember this moment and that will be enough. And it wasn't. You know, I would wake up and think to myself, this is it. You know, I'm not going to drink today. I'm going to keep my chin up. I'm going to keep a positive attitude. I'm going to have a good day. You know, and today's in the bag. And even with all of that, I couldn't stop myself from doing it again anyway. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. You know, towards the end when my husband asked me, you know, I was out of excuses and stories. I simply looked at him and said, I don't know. I don't know why. I just know I had to. You know, am I crazy? You know, am I an outright mental defective? You know, am I maladjusted to life? Maybe. Probably. But I told myself, you know, every time I came out of it, like, that is it. That is it. That is the last time. Plug in the jug. I'm not doing it again. Next time I want to drink, I'm going to remember this moment, and, you know, and the games begin again. You know, and a couple, if I made it 3 days, you know, it was back to the races. You know, and what finally, and I love, I have it highlighted and boxed in and underlined and all of that. My brain raced uncontrollably. You know, I suffer from these mental obsessions. Am I supposed to keep this 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. I suffer from these mental obsessions. I have this mind that is just this unstoppable high-speed hamster wheel in my head. And it the only thing that ever shut it off was to drink again. You know, I tried the books, I tried the gyms, the doctors, the pills, the vacations. I mean, I tried making lists and writing it all down on paper, right? If I get it down on paper and I get the chaos out of my head, maybe things will get a little quiet and I'll be able to manage better next time. You know, and everything I ever tried just failed over and over again. You know, and one time I woke up and I thought, I woke up and in our house, our sofa was right below the banister to the second floor. And I was looking up at the banisters and started to wonder that if I rigged up all of my belts just right, would it hold me? And I laid there on my sofa and so casually thought about killing myself, like another person might think, maybe I'll get up and do the dishes. I mean, something's wrong. And in the next instant, I became full of a terror that I'd never experienced before in my life, and that since getting sober, I haven't experienced again yet. I felt like death was sitting next to me on that sofa, and I was never so afraid of myself as I was in that moment. And I became so desperate and so willing to go to any lengths to find anything else, anything. I'd do anything. I'll run a marathon backwards naked. I don't care. You tell me what to do. I'll lick your shoes. I don't care. What do I have to do? I'll do it. You know, and that I came back to, after bouncing in and out of AA on top of, you know, all the drunken cruises and doctors and gyms and diets and everything else I tried, I was floating in and out of AA for years. And it occurred to me in that moment full of terror that the only place I ever saw people that seemed to come back from that state was in the rooms. Whether I was listening to them or not, that was the only place. I never saw them in a gym or in a book or in a doctor's office or on a drunken cruise. They were in these rooms. Well, I was never really looking for them anyway. So I came back and meant business this time. And this time I came back, I hit the ground running. I quickly got a sponsor, a home group. I took the steps, and I haven't looked back. And, you know, 3.5 years later, I've had a lot of stuff happen to me, and have I had passing thoughts? Yes. But that, like, unsatiable, nonstop urge that I, you know, the best I could put together was 3 days, that hasn't returned. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks,
Chris.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Are you doing the mic okay today? I woke up. It took me a long time to wake up. Drinking was like this really wonderful, exciting, thrilling thing. It made me feel good. It did all kinds of wonderful, great things for me. And to be honest with you, I really did not pay attention to how much or how often I drank. It just wasn't even a blip on the radar. It was just something I did without thinking. Some kind of instinct kicked in probably from the first time I took a drink. And if you'd asked me, I would have told you about a large amount of other things that were my problem, and alcohol certainly wasn't one of them. I would have told you about the problems I'd had in my childhood with my parents and bullies in school and things like that. I would have told you about the screwed up guy that I was dating. I would have told you about the girl that I don't like at work because she's trying to get my job. I would have told you that I just needed to go back to school or back to work or back to school or back to work. I did that a lot. The answer was always the opposite of what I was doing. I would have told you about these periods of dark depression that I had where I could like barely get out of bed. And just like Chris, I would have told you about the hamster wheel in my mind. I had a mind that just would not stop. It seemed to go constantly. I used to think that my mind needed like its own universe. Make room for all those thoughts and theme music. That was frequently playing in my mind. And alcohol certainly wasn't a problem. And I'd had probably what people would call warning signs early on. Every now and again, I would get like these really great ideas of things that I should do. I remember one night I was living with my folks because I had gotten engaged and we were going to go down to we were about to move to Texas, and so I was living with them until we got down there. And I sit down at the end of the day with my folks to have a couple of beers, because that's what everybody does after a long, hard day. They have a couple of beers, you know. It's like my own little personal little time out. And I sat down to have those couple of beers, and they went to bed. What I can tell you is I did not go to bed. I found myself going back and back to the refrigerator, and at some point during the night, I realized that there was a lot of empty beer cans in the trash can, and I was like absolutely horrified to think that these people, that they would see this in the morning and know how much I had drank. So there was like frequent trips to the outside trash can to get rid of the evidence. But somewhere around like 1 or 2 in the morning, I got this really great idea. I decided that it would be a good idea to play Ring and Run. I don't know if anybody's ever played that game, but it's really wonderful. What you do is you go up to some stranger's house and you ring the doorbell and you run away. You know what I mean? And I did this to one house so persistently that they called the cops on me. Apparently, people don't like their doorbell being rung at the middle of the night. And the cops came, and I really didn't want to deal with the cops, so I like ran out into the woods and I like hid. Unfortunately, I was wearing a white shirt, made me very easily identifiable, and they brought me back to the house. And they're like, you know, you have a decision here. You can go to the hospital or you can go to jail. And I didn't really particularly want to go to either one of those. I'm like, dude, my house is right here. Will you please just let me go back to the house? But they wouldn't. They're like, clearly something is very wrong with you. You need to come with us. So they took me to the hospital. And when I got to the hospital, I decided that, you know, I really did not want to be at the hospital. Apparently they don't like it when you try to leave the hospital. I feel a little bit bad for the nurses, because I'm sure that they had no idea that it was going to take 6 of them to restrain me, you know. And what it started out at the beginning of the night as, you know, I'm just going to have a couple of drinks, ended up with me being tied down to a hospital bed, you know. And how do you explain that kind of stuff the next morning? And that wasn't even a blip on the radar for me. You know, even something as big as that did not wake me up and say, hey, I should quit. You know, because those kinds of things, while they did occur, didn't happen every time I drank. You know, a lot of nights it was just, let's go out and have some fun, and I wind up safe and secure in my bed. If that stuff had happened every time I drank, I might have paid more attention. But it didn't. I drank for a lot of years, which some people call successfully, or I managed it, or whatever. Mostly I just didn't pay attention. The first time I ever noticed something weird about my drinking was shortly thereafter, when I had moved to Texas and I didn't have a job and I had a lot of free time. And I noticed that I was drinking during the day, and I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. You know, before I wanted to quit, you know, I wanted to get this stuff under control, because I really like to drink. I set these kind of rules for myself. You know, I'm not gonna drink at home, you know, and then I would drink at home. Or I'm not gonna keep it in the house, or we're only gonna drink at parties. And all these things were broken, you know. Later on, when I started to get really miserable from the drinking, and I thought I wanted to quit. If you had asked me if I wanted to stop, I would have told you that I did, but I would have been lying. What I really wanted was to be able to drink and feel good all at the same time. But I was a little disturbed by the frequency of hangovers and some of the physical reactions that I was getting to this stuff. So I played all these kinds of like little games, drink my vodka and water, right? Because the reason I'm getting so hungover is because I'm dehydrated. Right? So if I just like cut this got vodka with some water, then I won't get so dehydrated, you know. But over time, those things just did not seem to work, and the consequences started to build up. You know, had a couple of drugs in Publix, lost a job because of it, didn't wake me up. I think what finally did it was, I remember I was a family readiness group leader. I was married to a man in the military, and it was my responsibility to help provide for these families and make sure they were taken care of and blah, 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 blah. And I show up to lead one of these meetings drunk. And I was perfectly okay with that until the next day, when my husband came in and told me, some people noticed that you had been drinking. And instantly, you know, the stomach drops and it's like, oh crap, I can't do this anymore. you know, it's just not worth it. And I did wake up, and I did see that it had to be stopped, and I didn't, you know. Apparently, when you're an alcoholic, wanting to stop is not enough, and I had to learn that lesson over and over and over and over again. I threw everything I knew at it, and she got 3 days. I was, I don't know, probably a little less than that. I won't. I don't know. I something happens, you know. Like she says, the pressure builds. I forget it's a bad idea. I think for some odd reason that I really am going to be able to just drink one or two. And I just did it over and over again. And I do. I mean, that resolve, yes, again and again and again. And I do remember standing in the bathroom one day, looking in the mirror, thinking to myself, like, what is happening here? You know, this cannot be my life. Why do I keep doing this? Why? I don't know if we read it tonight, but there's a line in there. This is the cunning, baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And that's what I just couldn't figure out. You know, why can't I stop? It was incredibly confusing. And I did. I just got good and drunk for a long time. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. We're going to go to page 7 now. I'm going to start off with, it relieved me somewhat, on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desire to stop drinking was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. Chris?
I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic. I had a... at one point, registered myself for a, what was it even called? It was like a, oh, it was a wellness class at a local hospital. This is when I lived in upstate New York, at a local hospital, a wellness course, because I thought it would teach me, you know, how to have a positive outlook. You know, how to be more of a glass half full kind of a girl. You know, how to have a positive attitude, because I was maladjusted to life, right? You know, and that surely that would be it. You know, if I could just unlock this life thing, you know, I would feel better about myself and I wouldn't need to drink. That didn't work. A short time after that, I registered myself for an addiction class. Because I thought if I understood how this worked, you know, I would be able to, like, unwork it or something in my head. You know, I would figure it out, and again, I would unlock something, and it would all come together and make sense, and I wouldn't have to drink anymore. You know, this, even in the little bit that I picked up from floating in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 5 years before I stayed, you know, I would learn a little bit and think, you know, surely that's got to be enough. You know, I understand it now. I understand myself better now. I understand how this works now. And this knowledge should somehow be enough. But like that piece of paper, you know, when I wrote down all that pain on that piece of paper, you know, that the words and the knowledge are just not enough. Self-knowledge is not enough. There was one time I found, not going to bother you with the excuse because you'll all see right through it. But I found a very good excuse to go bar hopping in a mall by myself. Because, I mean, Who doesn't do that? Right? Late in the afternoon, I realized my husband was going to beat me home. And he was going to know, one, that I was drinking again, and two, drove. And I already have one DUI at this point. And I've already gotten the ultimatums. He's come in the room crying. I mean, this is after years of him, you know, going to bat with me. And so I have to come up with a plan, right? Because he's going to beat me home, so I got to... So I call him at work, and I tell him I'm at the mall. I was buying gifts for our nieces and nephews, and I wasn't quite done. You're going to drive past the mall on your way home. You should stop and have dinner with me. So Houlihan, 6 o'clock, I get there at 1:15. I have a beer. Of course I smell like alcohol. I just had a beer. Covered. So we have dinner. We're leaving. He asks me, are you sure you're okay to drive? I'm not going to share with you the exact language I used with him, but I was very good at manipulating him into thinking that he was overreacting and being a, choose your own word there. So this is the conversation we have on the way to the cars. I was not okay. I was driving his SUV. I entered the New York State Thruway at exit 1. I know exit 2 very well. It is the exit for the university where I went to school. It is a 2-lane exit, but I got on at exit 1 and I blacked out. This is March in upstate New York, so we still have the snowbanks from the plows, and I didn't get over. So I go up the snowbank, completely catch air. I take out the exit sign. I re-enter the New York State Thruway, roll my husband's SUV down the interstate, and my husband, driving my car behind me, got to watch. He got to pull over and run up to his SUV, thinking he was going to find a puddle of bones and mush and, you know, the greatest horror possibly of his life. I was fine. I somehow managed not to hit another car or harm another person, and I came to rest nose first in a snowbank. He got to blow his own breathalyzer. He got to walk his own line. He got to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and follow the light and do all of that. He got to watch me get cuffed and go back to jail. Because in upstate, well, in New York State, when you're more than double the legal limit on your second offense, it's an automatic felony, and you lose your license and go directly to jail. He stayed. He's still with me today. You think that kind of knowledge is enough? I drank for 3 years after that wreck. No amount of knowledge is enough. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, I love me some self-knowledge. I do. That would be the second thing I tried. The first thing I tried was just what we've been talking about, willpower. I'm just going to pick myself up by my bootstraps and quit on my own. And after a long time of, figuring out that that was not going to work, that instant that woke me up, I did. I did willpower for a long time, and it didn't work. And one night, I went home and I drank myself some vodka because I love vodka. And I passed out, and the next morning I woke up, and there was a note from my husband saying that he was leaving. And I want to tell you that really did it, right? That was my bottom, and that didn't. It didn't. I started drinking right away, but what it is that I realized that I was going to need help. And my first instinct was not to run to, like, Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never really heard about it. I didn't know what you guys are about. I don't know. It just didn't occur to me. But I had been watching a lot of Intervention. I do. I love. I loved to DVR Intervention and get drunk and watch that stuff. It was wonderful. Awesome. It did. And so I thought I needed to go to rehab. And so that's exactly what I did. I spent 5 days doing absolutely everything I could to find myself a rehab, and there was a facility that finally took me in, and I was there for 21 days, and they gave me a lot of self-knowledge. They explained the disease theory of alcoholism. They talked to me about my triggers, which is kind of a joke to me because, like, being awake is my trigger. They told me about people, places, and things, and I'm like, oh, Lordy. And I set out of there prepared to stay sober, and I did. I stayed sober for quite some time, or what for me was quite some time. And I went out, and you want to talk about changing people, places, and things. My husband couldn't deal with me, so he asked me to move back to Virginia with my parents. So we're talking about a whole new setting here. And I attempted to stay sober, and I did for a little while. Everything was going good, too. I had I got a job. I got enrolled in school. I was talking to my husband, and we had been able to patch things up. And I remember I was about 4 months sober, and my cousin was getting married. And I was a little bit worried about going there because, like, you know, there was going to be booze and things like that. But, you know, I kind of figured, no big deal. I've been worried before, and nothing ever happened. So I show up at the wedding, and we go to the ceremony, and the ceremony ends, and I'm walking back to go to the reception, and all I can think on the way there is, you know, I would just love to relax and have a good time with my family. You know, maybe I can just have a couple of drinks tonight, and I'll get back on the wagon tomorrow, you know? And I go back into that reception, and I walk up right up to, I get there early. I gotta, like, rush ahead of everybody before they get there. And because they all know that I'm not supposed to be drinking at this point. You can't drink in front of them. And I go up to the bartender, and I order, of course, my favorite vodka. And he's a really nice guy, and he pours me, like, 2 inches of the stuff. And I go into the bathroom, and I proceed to drink it. And I didn't stop at that one like I thought I was. I actually spent it out on the patio with the bar out there while everybody was inside having a good time. And what I can tell you is I didn't, like, wake up the next morning and get right back on the wagon. And to this day, I'm not quite sure how to explain what happened because I somehow magically forgot, you know. All that stuff that I had learned was out the window. You know, I forgot about the lies that I was going to tell, the people that I was going to hurt, the things that would happen to me when I started to drink. And I was off to the races again. I don't know, off to the races for me. Some people, that's like a weekend binge. I don't know. I did that when I was, like, younger. I was way past. And it just, once again, right back where I started from, became a daily and regular thing. And always that thought, I'm just going to drink today and quit tomorrow. You know, that's the delusion I've always suffered from, is somehow I'm going to be able to have a couple and things are going to turn out all right. But self-knowledge certainly never kept me sober. It was about as useful as willpower. It always sounds good. You know, I do. I'm a big planner in my head. I like to sit on my couch, and I like to plan out all the things that are going to happen and the ways that I'm going to change and all this stuff. And it just never seems to come into reality. But it sounds good at the time. Sounds good at the time. So that's my experience with self-knowledge, is that it just, I don't know, it goes out the window.
Thanks, guys. You know, we're going to go to page 24. The fact is, page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not like other people. You know, my husband is. He's a normal drinker. He can watch a football game and have a beer. And then finish that beer and not think about beer for the rest of the night. He may not think about beer again for days, maybe even weeks. Mm-hmm. Never mind, he left 5 in the fridge. I don't get that. You know, what's wrong with you? I'm not like other people. You know, when I put a drink in me, something happens in me that does not happen in him. It doesn't. You know, I have one. By the time I'm halfway through one, I'm thinking of 2, right? When I'm on my second, I'm thinking about 5. You know, and by 5, I'm thinking, well, I might as well get good and drunk, right? And so, you know, oblivion. But, you know, that it, and you know, I say 3 days. I'm talking, that's a good run for me. You know, the next day, maybe the day after, if it was an unusually bad drunk, and I put 3 days together, maybe 3 days. You know, I cannot remember. I cannot remember that pain, the shame, the embarrassment, the dread, you know, all of that awful stuff that I woke up with just seems to be gone. You know, and I trick myself into thinking that, you know, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to have 1. I'm going to have 2. It's not going to be like that. I'm going to alternate with water. I did that one too. You know, I'll pop some Tylenol before bed so I won't wake up with this screaming headache and I won't be so dehydrated. And I try all those tricks too because I really believe in my mind that it's going to be different this time. I do. I do not have the power to bring forth the memory of the disaster that I know comes with putting one in me. Because I am convinced that this one's going to be different. That leaves me with complete, absolutely no defense against that first drink. You know, 1, 2, 3 days maybe later, you know, when all that high-speed hamster wheel chaos returns, what do I do? Of course I drink again. You know, that was the only thing that ever shut it off for me. You know, and there were a lot of people in my life who thought that in that moment I was making some sort of a choice. And it sure didn't seem in that moment like I had a choice at all. You know, when all of that high-speed chaos returned, I had one option and one option only, and that was to drink again. You know, and I would play all sorts of games and tricks in my mind to give myself the green light to go again, and I would. And, you know, and as soon as I take that first drink, all bets are off. You know, could I once in a while, to prove a point to my husband, have 1 or 2 beers and say, look, honey, I can stop? To make a point, sure, I did that a few times. But I was absolutely horribly miserable. You know, because when I was trying to control it, I could never, ever enjoy it. When I was enjoying my drinking, it's because I wasn't controlling it. You know, I was not able to control and enjoy drinking at the same time. It's not something I was ever able to do. So it seemed like I was always falling victim to that first drink again, you know. I get the green light, I go again, and you know, the games begin again. You know, and every time I emerge from that cycle, I'm a little bit worse off. You know, there's a little bit more shame, a little bit more pain. The consequences are getting a little bit bigger, a little closer together. But when that chaos returns a couple of days later after I've sobered up the next day or whenever, you know, the only way to shut that off was to drink again, you know, and repeat and repeat. And there just never seemed to be any way to stop myself from taking the first one, you know, because I drank for the shutoff. Thanks.
Yeah. Sometimes I hear in meetings that people say, you got to remember your last drunk, and with the implication that that's going to keep you sober. And, like, this blows that right out of the water. The memory of my last drunk never kept me sober. The consequences, they never kept me sober. I remember after that reception incident, you know, I drank for several more months. And I managed to pull together another 2 months. You know, you'd think I would have learned my lesson by then, you know. And I remember being very spun up, like Chris said. My mind just would not give me a break. I would wake up in the morning, and it would be just going nonstop. It would plague me throughout the day. Going to bed, trying to go to bed was kind of a joke. I would, like, lay down at 10 o'clock or 10 p.m., like, exhausted, you know, going to get to bed early, get some rest. And 4 hours later, I'm just going, please, let me fall asleep, you know. And I just remember thinking, I need to have some relief. And, you know, but by this time, you know, I've lost everything that I care about. The husband is left for good, you know, and things like that. I just didn't learn my lesson. I remember planning it out, too, sitting there, you know, thinking, you know, my parents are going to go. I'm living with my parents by that time. It was awesome. You know, my parents are going to be going out of town, and I got to work on Wednesday and Friday, so that means that I can drink on Wednesday night and Thursday, and everything's going to be fine. Thinking, you know, maybe this isn't a bad idea, but you know what, I can definitely get away with it, you know. And so it did occur to me that, yeah, this isn't too smart, you know, but was that thought enough to prevent me from taking that drink? Absolutely not. It always fails, you know. That first offense, that only happens to me with alcohol. It does not happen to me with other things so much. I remember when I was a little kid, for some odd reason, I went up to the teacher's desk, and she had a stapler on her desk. And don't ask me why I did this, but I did. And I went up to that stapler, and I stuck my finger under that stapler, and I smashed it down, you know. And what I can tell you is it hurt like a very badly. And since that day, I have never again gone up to a stapler, stuck my finger underneath, and smashed it down. You know, I learned my lesson. But with alcohol, it was never that way. I always forgot. I always convinced myself it was a good idea. I was always just consumed with the more concerned with the relief that I was going to get than the consequences. You know, that just didn't happen with alcohol. Whatever it is in other people's brains that tells them, no, don't do that again, it's a bad idea. In mine, when it comes to alcohol, it's just not there. You know, and it wasn't until being in Alcoholics Anonymous and drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous that I really, really understood that. Because when I first came here, I knew, you know, I looked at the, oh, we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. I was like, check, you know, got that. You know, I was drinking all the time. I was like in and out of rehab. My husband had left me, like, yeah, I got that part. But what I didn't understand is that once I got sober, that I would not be able to stay sober, you know. And drinking again in Alcoholics Anonymous did that for me. And that really was, for me, the delusion that had to be smashed, that I was not going to be able to drink successfully, and that I was not going to be able to quit on my own, or with this thing called willpower and self-knowledge. And that's where I was incredibly grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and their talk of spiritual matters. Because I really truly understood that if I wanted to stay sober, I was going to have something bigger than me help me stay sober, you know, because I couldn't do it. You know, I realized there's like nothing on this green earth that's going to stop me from drinking, you know. And I did a lot of things, went to the doctors and things like that. Post-it notes, you had your little note, I had post-it notes. I put a post-it note on the mirror on the door. Didn't when work. You went on the way out. Yeah, those don't work either. You know, and it's that first drink that really, really dooms me. It's that mental obsession that dooms me, you know. Last week we talked about that phenomenon of craving. And at the end of the day, big deal. Big deal. You know, if every time you drink, you get drunk, well, stop drinking. You know, you're not doomed. If every time you eat a strawberry, you break out in a hive, stop eating the strawberry. You know, but when you can't stop doing that, then we have a real problem. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Okay, I'm going to read a paragraph from page 41. It starts off as soon as I regained, and it's on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. And it had never occurred to me in all of my years of wellness classes and addiction courses and doctors giving me prescriptions and a referral to yet another therapist I'd have to lie to, you know, and trying to take the vacations because I need to get away in the self-help books like Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul, you know, and all these goofy things that I'm trying that alcohol was not my problem. And that thought never, ever entered my mind. I had a drinking problem, and it never occurred to me that all of that thinking, you know, that crazy high-speed hamster wheel thinking that preceded the drink, that that was where the problem was. And that never occurred to me. You know, in all my years of doing all these things to try and solve my drink problem, you know, I wouldn't learn that until I came here and started working this program. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. What's more powerful, me or alcoholism? You know, like all my little finite human ideas and designs, you know, I can put together all the gyms and diets and books and doctors and referrals and prescriptions and vacations and classes and courses that I want to take. And all my little finite human ideas and designs were never going to match the power of alcoholism. They were never gonna work. Every single one of them was going to fail me. But those are the things that I had to try. You know, those are just the things that had to happen to me. You know, I had to get completely and utterly hopeless and full of pain and desperate and racked with terror before I would realize that lack of power was my dilemma. You know, I was never gonna pull it together and match it. You know, it was when I came here and found a power greater than myself that was gonna relieve me of that alcoholism, did I actually begin to find and enjoy any semblance of sobriety. Thanks.
Thank you. Ryan?
Yeah, they are just hitting down the, banging it into our heads that willpower and self-knowledge aren't going to fix it. And oddly enough, that was something that nobody could give me. I had to go and find out for myself. I mean, I went to meetings for 10 months with this information. And, you know, people sitting in meetings, you know, telling me that, you know, without help, you're going to get drunk or whatever it is that I heard. I don't even remember. It's kind of a blur now. People sitting down and reading the book with me and trying to, like, educate me about curious mental blank spots and all that stuff. It just didn't keep me sober. It didn't do it for me. I really, really had to go out there and discover for myself that I was not going to be able to get a hold of this on my own. And when it talks about it being a crushing blow and being hopelessly defeated, what a horrible place that is. It's a very dark and horrible place, and I remember it. I remember it. It was about actually a week before I got sober. And I remember, just realizing that this was as good as it gets. This is as good as it gets. I'm gonna drink for the rest of my life. It's going to be awful, and there's not a darn thing that I can do about it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we like try to threaten alcoholics with death. I think that's kind of a joke, because I was kind of welcoming it. I would have been like, yes, thank you. please kill me. Give me relief from this. God, I lost my train of thought. And I was just hopelessly defeated. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was nothing that I was going to be able to do to get sober. And that's when I became very grateful that I had been in AA and heard about an alternative approach, one that didn't require me to, that was spiritually based and simple in nature, you know, show up, take the 12 steps. Because if people had come to me with something other than a spiritual approach, I think I probably would have laughed them off at that point. Because I've been there, I've done that, I've tried it, all that stuff, it just doesn't work for me. And I became open to this spiritual way of life. And it was only through doing those things that I was able to get sober. Thank you.
Thanks. This is the last paragraph we're going to read tonight, and it's a short one. Oh. And the guys are going to talk for a couple of minutes on this last paragraph, a couple of minutes each. So on page 43, and it just starts off once more on page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
His defense must come from a higher power. My sponsor had me circle every must in the book. It like I was just saying, you know, I really tried for a long time to put every idea, every action that I thought I could take on my own to fix this. You know, I really wanted more than anything just to stay home and take care of this myself. You know, I showed up for years. I took, you know, the chair closest to the door. You know, I showed up a minute before 8. I left a minute after 9. No, I don't want your number. You can keep the book. Thank you. Have a nice night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at that point, I was doing it to appease my husband and a judge. Maybe a few other people in there. I wasn't done. You know, I had to try a few more things. And in the end, you know, when I knew I was hopelessly defeated and it was a crushing blow, I knew there was no way I was going to be able to stay home and do this myself. And one of the very last things I did was I picked up the phone and I called a hotline. But I couldn't call the AA hotline. Because my husband forced me to call it 5 years earlier. And I thought if I called, you'd know it was me. Chris Sussman, you're still drinking? Didn't you call us 5 years ago? So I called a non-AA hotline. You know, and I was on my way back to treatment one last time. I was very fortunate that this time around I was in a treatment program that was, I was inpatient, as I should have been, for 30 days. And I was very fortunate that I was in a program that got me into the literature and putting stuff on paper. It got me, I won't say I was completely honest, because I wouldn't do that until my fourth step. And even that, even then I tried to lie. But I didn't get away with it. But most importantly, it got me to a meeting every night. By this time, I was here. I was in Virginia. My husband volunteered for active duty, hoping to go to the Middle East. That's how willing he was to get away from me. But the Navy sent him to Virginia, which I could drive to, so it wasn't quite far enough for him, because I'm here. So once I got out of that treatment program was when I really hit the ground running. And after all of those things finally failed me and I reached that complete and utter place of dark hopelessness and despair and pain, and found that willingness to go to any lengths, I came back and I didn't take the chair by the door, and I did take your numbers. And I showed up early, and I stayed late, and I actually participated in the fellowship. And I didn't try to stay home and find some crafty way to take care of it myself anymore. I got to work right away with a sponsor who got me into the book and steps. I got a home group that immediately got me into service. I thought they were crazy. I showed up for my first business meeting and they handed me the key to the church. And I thought they were nuts. But they were really big on service and got me into service right away. You know, and it didn't take very long, and it didn't take me working with my sponsor and getting too deep into the book before I learned about that lack of power and how I had to try all those things and how it was never going to work. That staying home by myself was never going to amount to enough to feed alcoholism by myself. I showed up completely full of doubt, without a God. You know, I've been very deep into the field of science for a long time, and I wrote God off a long time ago. I thought I was going to be able to convince my sponsor to skip step two in that chapter in the book. I don't need it. Good. No God. It's fine. You know, it didn't work out that way. We showed up and we read that chapter, we agnostics, and I showed up completely full of doubt, calling myself an atheist. And an hour and a half later, I was a believer. And from that moment on, I believed in a power greater than myself, who's not only lifted that obsession to drink, but has lifted many other things also, like fear of people and rejection and relationships and many other problems in my life, has restored me to sanity, you know, and all of these beautiful things. And it was always going to take a power greater than me and far greater than alcoholism to remove all those things from me. It was only ever going to be the way it was ever going to work for me. You know, it just, my journey had to take me through some detours for me to get there and finally find that. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for sharing. And that brings us to the end of the sharing portion of the meeting. I'd like to thank these two for coming out tonight and doing such a good job. Thank you so much. I'm going to pass the basket in accordance with AA's seventh tradition, and the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the General Service Office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, are there any AA-related announcements? Yes, I've got one right here. And our group, our home group, the Simple Actions Group, and it's actually on Friday. It's finally here, folks. We've been talking about this for 100 years, and it's finally here. There's flyers up at the back this Friday. Not in here, but at Ghent United Methodist, which is just over the road. The address is on there. It kicks off Friday at 7 o'clock. Bob D from Vegas is going to come in and share his story with us. And then on Saturday, from 9:30 a.m., through to about 4 p.m. with a free potluck lunch in the middle, Bob D is going to do a series of workshops. All you need to do is sit back and relax and soak up some great AA talks. And it's completely free. There's no registration fee. If you want to bring a potluck dish, please do, for everybody to share. And as I say, there's some flyers over there. And that's this Friday and Saturday. Any other announcements?
Sunday night is 5:30, United We Stand at Wayland and Baby Boulevard in the United Christ Church. And we start at 5:30. We've had a very big turnout, over 30 people each week. It's an alternative to the other meeting that's only in Norfolk at 7. And we're studying Living Sober. Mm-hmm. So come out, please, 5:30 on Sunday night.
Thank you.
Greg, alcoholic.
Hey, Greg.
I have some phone wash opportunities that I'm desperate for. Please help. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. So if you want to help with the phone watch, Greg can hook you up with that after the meeting. Just approach him. Chris, you got an announcement?
I do. Chris Alcoholic. My home group is Downtown Young and Sober. We meet Thursday nights at Epworth United Methodist Church on Freemason Street in downtown Norfolk, and we're coming up on our 9th anniversary. So we will be celebrating that on Thursday, November 7th. We're going to have a potluck dinner at 7, and we've asked a speaker to come in at 8, a young man who's been a good friend to downtown for many years. So if you want to come out and celebrate with us, that would be great. Thursday, November 7th. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And to join the home group, just say you want to join it. There's no, like, membership requirements, really. I mean, hopefully you're an alcoholic. Otherwise, what are you doing here, right? Anyway... newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Hi, Darren. Welcome. Anyone else? Okay, good. Point out, literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. The literature's on that table next to the coffee. There's some books and pamphlets and that stuff. If you want some literature, just help yourself. Ask one of the home group members if it's a book. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? So thanks again to the ladies for participating tonight. They did a great job. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step one, which we discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at this incredible Mexican restaurant, which was pretty much undiscovered until we started going there. And it's on Colonial and 22nd Street. It's one of Norfolk's hidden gems. And please, please come out and join us. We always have a good laugh, and it's always good fun. So anyway, for those that would care to join us, let's make a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. That was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
It was awesome. I'm sorry about the paragraph mix-up. That wasn't intentional.
You know.
What was that all about? Oh, my goodness. I do the emails very methodically. That's the first time that's ever happened.
So
it must have been meant to happen. Sorry.
It was definitely meant to happen.
I sent you the paragraphs for step one, the first part. It doesn't matter. It's done now.
It was
okay. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.